Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You're ready, Bob.
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome into the Otson Audibles podcast. It's a Monday. It means we're bringing back the mailbag, Eric Scopel and Jared Mack on today's show. Previewing a little spring football practice. All three questions here are spring football related. We wanted to make a show, a mailbag, I should say, devoted purely to what is starting this week. Kind of a busy week for us, Jared. We've got Oregon's Pro Day here on Tuesday. It'll be tomorrow. Two of us will both be out there. We'll have an intern. We'll have a photographer. We'll have full coverage. We may or may not do a recap podcast at some point, depending on how interesting things turn out to be. Thursday, first day of spring practice, only a couple of practices in the month of March, but we'll have full coverage of that as well. The two of us will be out there checking out whatever is available to us. We still don't have full, information in terms of how much practice will be open, if it will be open, who we'll be speaking to. I imagine probably just Dan, but either way, we'll learn some things about this year's team. I know we're both pretty excited to be out there for that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it's going to be like for practice. I'm sure we'll find out probably within the next, 48 hours, if not even sooner.
Hope so.
So excited for that. A lot of new faces, a lot of new people. I think a couple questions are going to be about that, eh?
I think they will. So let's just go ahead and jump right in here. We've only got three today, so it'll be a little bit on the shorter side of the pod. But we will definitely be back later this week recapping either the Pro Day or both the Pro Day and the first set of Oregon practices in March. And for those who haven't been listening or haven't been paying attention, there will be two practices in March, then a couple-week break for spring from the academic perspective, and then they'll reconvene in Eugene early April for the rest of spring practice. All right, first question comes in from @RyeGilver, who asks, which player do you predict will wow fans during the spring game, much like Marcus Mariota did during his first spring game? Pick one on offense, one on defense. #OtsAndAudibles. Thank you, Ryan, for using the hashtag. We appreciate that. I think why don't we just each go offense? You go, then you can say your offense. I'll do my defense and so forth here.
Okay.
I'm going to make mine really simple. I'm just going to say Dylan Gabriel, in part because there are several parallels in terms of Gabriel and Mariota. And I understand that's not exactly what the question is about, but a couple of lads from Hawaii making their debuts, I guess, and playing the quarterback position. I just anticipate Dylan Gabriel is going to be really, really good here. There's reasons that, he is looked at as a Heisman Trophy candidate, as an All-American, on some of these way too early looks at a peek at what an All-American team might look like. He's a really talented quarterback. We talked a lot about him, but I would be really surprised if we come out of the spring game thinking he didn't show well. And we should note, that's going to be a really big component of this offseason conversation about the offense, because I'm anticipating we'll see very little during actual spring practice. So whatever we see at the spring game, Jared's probably going to be kind of forming our decisions on Dylan. So I would imagine a big day on April 27th would go a long way towards kind of furthering that, Oregon is for real. This team's got what they need at quarterback. So I'll keep mine really simple there. I don't have a whole lot else to add. I mean, it's the timing of this is a little strange because we are still, despite spring starting in a handful of days, a month and a half from the spring game. So it's really hard for me to predict much more particulars from why I think Dylan will have a great game. But just as simple as a veteran guy coming in here, I think he'll want to show well to the fan base and introduce himself for what will be a 1 year run with the Ducks.
Am I picking offense just to double check here?
Yeah. Why don't you just pick offense? Yeah. Why don't you do that?
Okay. Yeah. I think Dylan Gabriel is the obvious answer. I think it's a good pick by you. I think that's the one that, I don't know, like, well, WoW fans for sure. I don't think it'll be much of a surprise just because he's, you know, proven. So I'm trying to think of guys who are going to come in. It really has to just be a newcomer for both of these.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, because you come in after last season, you saw the best out of a lot of kids last season. And, you know, unless somebody changes positions, like a Jeffrey Bosser or something like that, I don't know if there's necessarily going to be someone who wows the fans as a guy who's returning. So give me Evan Stewart, because he's could be catching a lot of passes from Dylan Gabriel in the spring game, or Dante Moore, or Austin Novosad. I just think he's been incredibly underrated and underused during his tenure at Texas A&M. They just didn't have a great offense. He's been hurt. He posted on Twitter the other day that he was healthy, so that's a positive sign. I think he'll be in Eugene for the spring game. I think that's like one of the bigger question marks, because we don't have a roster yet. And these have all been, while the recruiting class is very public and who's enrolling early and everything like that, the transfer portal additions are not. So forgive me if Evan Stewart just isn't on campus by this time, but I think that he will be. And I think that he's going to be a day one guy for them. I almost picked Tez Johnson just because he'll be the number one option and everybody will be like, oh yeah, no, this guy's also really good. I kind of forgot. It's been, you know, 6 months since I've seen him catch like 11 passes for 100 something yards in the Fiesta Bowl. So, or it'd be 4 months, excuse me. I can't do math. So I almost picked him, but I think it's going to be Evan Stewart. I just think he's going to be a dog this year. I just really like his play style. I really like his potential to do the same thing that Troy Franklin did and keep it a vertical passing game. He doesn't have the same measurables as Troy, but he plays very similarly. He's arguably a better athlete. I would honestly say that he is a better athlete. So I just think that he's going to be the dude to come out. And if anybody's going to have like a 100-yard day at the spring game, it's either going to be him or Tez Johnson. But we've already seen Tez Johnson for a whole season, so give me Evan Stewart.
And he had his spring game moment last year with that long slant route for like a touchdown too. So Tez is already known. What did you think about, I was thinking maybe Dante Moore would have been kind of a fun sleepery pick here. Obviously he's not going to matter.
Yeah.
We hope he doesn't matter, knocking on wood, this year, just because obviously Gabriel was brought in to be the guy. But I would imagine a hypothetical that would make Oregon fans really excited is if Dante Moore just totally dominates the spring game and he's on campus for a year with that kind of expectation, he's going to be really special come 2025. I think that would be a thing that would make fans excited. I'm not necessarily going to predict that one because, you know, having watched Dante at UCLA, like he could certainly have a really great day, but there was some pretty fundamentally concerning things there, not in a way where I think he's broken, but like it was not exactly a, wow, he was incredible every time out for UCLA. Yeah. So
no, he was a true freshman at the Power Five level.
Right, which is part of the reason I want to be hesitant to be like, I think he's going to be amazing, because I think despite being a five-star recruit, he's still a developmental player at this point. There's still more needed from Dante, and I don't know if we should set the expectation that by the end of his first spring in Eugene, he's suddenly fixed and ready to go and looks amazing. But if that were the outcome, I think there'd be a fan base that would be really fired up about that. That might be the one that gets people like almost the most excited big picture if you were to have a great spring game.
I mean, we've seen it before. We saw it 2 years ago with Bo Nix, where you had no idea what the expectation was from him. We all saw what he did at Auburn. And, you know, I was on the record about being like, this is a bad pickup. Like, I don't think Bo Nix is any good. And then in the spring game, he's like a pure pocket passer who's just hitting guys like 30 yards downfield. And looks like the Bo Nix we ended up seeing the next 2 years. So, again, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm with you. Like, he's a developmental quarterback. He's only a sophomore. He's probably no more than 20 years old. Like, he has a lot of time. And Wolstein has had a proven track record that he can develop guys. We always heard really good things about Austin Novosad and Ty Thompson. Ty Thompson looked at his very best this season when he got into games. So, you know, the track record is there for Stein. I think that's certainly a storyline to follow. I mean – I think it would make – it would obviously make Oregon fans happy if he had a good day, just to be like, hey, in a year we got that guy. Like, we have – you know, hopefully Dylan Gabriel performs well, and they could say, oh, well, yeah, I got this guy this year and that guy next year. Like, wow, that's really good job, Dan Lanning, and providing for the future. But we'll see. I'm excited to see them both. That's the end of the story.
Why don't we snake draft this one, and why don't you go ahead and name your defensive player? Because I have a couple different choices, and depending upon which you have, I might go a different route.
That's fair. I would pick Jamari Caldwell if this was like a real game, but
correct, right?
It's not. I last year I remember being as a spectator, kind of wowed by Kyrie Jackson and Tysheem Johnson, and then a little bit of Devin Jackson at the end of the game, just with his speed. So I think it's going to be like another secondary player. I think honestly, getting to watch Jabbar Muhammad like up close and personal for practices and the whole spring game, and just getting to watch him would be a lot of fun. But I'm not going to go with that one. I'm going to go with a safer pick. I'm going to go with Kobe Savage. I really like his game. I like his tape. I think Oregon really needs some help there, obviously, at the safety position, especially with losing Evan Williams. I think Kobe Savage is going to take in that role kind of perfectly. I wouldn't say that they're the same type of player. I think they have different traits, but you know, they both played downhill. They both were okay in coverage, but they both gave it their all, like every single down that they were out there. And I think the spring game is going to be no different. Like, the spring game is always like a little more lackadaisical than a regular season game, but it's still intense. And I think Kobe Savage is still going to bring that intensity no matter where he goes. So I'm excited to see him play in like a real 11 on 11 circumstance and not just have him go through hitting drills at practice for the first 15 to 18 minutes that we're there. Like, I think that he's just going to light up wherever he is on the field, and everybody's going to know, like, oh, there's Kobe. There's number whatever he's going to wear this season.
I do think the Kobe Evan Williams, a comparison of that isn't like overly flawed. Like, I think that's
no, there's pretty, they have some similarities,
right? You know, so yeah, no, I like that pick too. Let me take the biggest swing we've made, just because we've done only transfer players so far. Yep. I'll just pick Elijah Rushing, you know, and again, this is so hard because I haven't seen any of these guys physically in person on campus yet. So for me to sit up here before they even start practice and make a prediction for who's going to wow fans, it's probably a question we would be better served, you know, answering like 10 days before the spring game, not 6 weeks. But, you know, you think about what sort of things would get fans excited. If Rushing comes out of the spring game with like two or three sacks or something like that, if a true freshman edge guy comes in and makes an immediate impact, especially when there's need in that front seven, I think that would be something that would be really encouraging. I just think, you know, there's so much made out of this true freshman recruiting class, especially on defense. Like, the front seven has, it's like, I don't know, like 8 or 9 blue chippers just in this class alone. And there's going to be, I'm just going Rushing because he's the most highly rated, and he plays a position where if he does have a couple of sacks, that's going to be like, rah, rah, look at this, we're ready to go. But there's going to be one or two of these guys who does pop. And like, for some reason, the other name that popped to my head was like Kamar Mathudi. I just think athletically, from what I've seen, I have actually seen him in person from a recruiting, you know, at a camp up in Eugene he was at last year. I think he was up. Was he at SNL too? I'm trying to remember if Kamar made it over.
I think he was. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've seen him a few times. I just know I just believe in the athletic tools. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if like he's just flying around and you come out saying, and I guess this is previewing a question we have later, so I won't completely ruin it, but I wouldn't be surprised if he come out saying like, this is a guy who can help Oregon right away, because there are two really, really surefire starters at linebacker. I love Devin Jackson. I guess that's not like a surefire write his name in Sharpie on the 2 deep, but I think he'll be there. There isn't necessarily like a fourth guy who I'm like, not to belittle your baseball player, Jared, but Bryce Butcher.
No, 100%. I get it. I don't have Bryce in my 2 deep.
I know you don't, but I'm just one of these true freshmen wouldn't surprise me if we come out saying like they're going to be one of the guys. So that's another name to throw out there. But I think there could be a lot of fun choices. Maybe this is one we revisit sometime in April once we've seen a little bit more of whatever it is we get to see during spring.
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of good choices. I just think like the easiest answer is to go with a transfer portal guy. I did think of like, and again, like the spring football game, like the guys in the trenches are certainly competing, don't get me wrong, but you're not going to know how many sacks they got at the end of the day, or if it was a sack, or you know, or a tackle for a loss. Like they're gonna, it's kind of like the Pro Bowl for the NFL, where they get into the backfield and it's like, oh darn, this pass is still completed. Like I don't know what's gonna happen. So the defensive line is kind of tough to pick, but I like the linebackers idea. I was gonna save that until the last question, but
yeah,
that's a good one. I was thinking of other guys, but I still think, you know, a defensive back is going to be probably the biggest guy who pops, just because it's going to probably be a lot of air yardage. They're probably not going to run their guys too much because they don't want to have any injuries, which I get. But I don't know. I really like Kobe Savage, but we'll see who it is who pops. But I think it'll just be a secondary guy regardless. It could be one of the true freshmen too, like Ifeo Badegu or Dakota Field, someone like that.
Jabbar probably is like – should be the number one pick just because of position and talent and expectation, right? So mm-hmm. That was actually my first inclination as well. But we'll see. I mean, I there's so many new faces on defense that it's going to be really fun. That's like probably just big picture. What is the thing I'm most excited about for watching the spring is just who are these guys on defense? Because, and we'll get to some, a lot of questions on the show about that. You're relying on a lot of newcomers, and this is going to be our first glimpse of a lot of them. I'm going to call a quick Autzen audible here, Jared, and mm-hmm. just move up that question we were referring to in the play sheet. Sure. Make it the second question. Just because we were just talking about it, so let's just dive right into it. It's a question from at UO4Life 84457. Which young front seven players do you think will crack the two deep by the end of spring? Hashtag Autzen audibles. That's, you can see why I wanted to bring that one up. We were just talking about Kamar maybe ending up in the two deep. Jared, you're the one who's actually composed a two deep. It's on the website. You actually put that together about a week ago tomorrow.
Yeah, like a week ago, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you kind of give us a recap of where you have the two deep now? And then I don't know if this is something you've really thought about, but maybe like what kind of players you think could actually crack it? Like who are some of the young guys? And I'll have some feedback too, but since that is your side of the ball and you just kind of did this exercise recently, why don't you kind of run through what you have there and then kind of give some thoughts on how it could change? Because, you know, the two deep, I think, on defense is, especially in that front seven, is probably unquestionably the most challenging part of developing a depth chart on this team. The offense was rather straightforward. I think the secondary's got question marks, but especially that defensive line, like it's just – you're really kind of throwing darts at the dartboard there for picking the names.
What do we want to qualify young as? Like, are we saying a true freshman, a redshirt?
I think like first or second
underclassman.
Let's say first or second year player. And you know what? Yeah, let's say underclassman. Does Ben Roberts, is he technically a junior?
He's a redshirt sophomore.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, because I think he still qualifies to me as a young player because we've seen him play like 100 snaps. Those are the guys.
Okay. Well, there are a couple guys who make the two deep, especially for the front seven. None at linebacker, so
yeah.
That was the case. At linebacker, I had Bossa and Jacobs and then Jerry Mixon and Devin Jackson. Those are my...
Jerry's a young guy, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Jerry Mixon is a redshirt freshman. I originally had Betcher, but I've since changed it after a change of heart to loving Jerry Mixon. And then Devin Jackson is, I think he'll be, usually going to be a redshirt sophomore next year. Redshirt junior.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. So I guess technically you got two of them in there.
I got two of them in there. So go me. The redshirt stuff always messes me up, but. Yeah, so Mixon and Jackson, I think, we'll see. I love Devin Jackson. I've always put that out there. People know that if you listen to the podcast. So I'm a little partial to, you know, hopefully me being correct more than anything else about his his ascent into being a starter. But he's just a great money linebacker. Like, he's 6'2", 230 pounds. He runs a 100-yard or 100-meter dash in under 11 seconds. Like, he's just what you want. He's, in my eyes, like the perfect heir to Jeffrey Bosa at the money linebacker spot. And then for the Mac linebacker with Jerry Mixon, yeah, he was a bigger guy than I thought going into last season.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, he was a running back in high school. He was just at 6'2", 200 pounds. It's like, well, you know, he's not going to play. He needs to add weight. And then he comes in, he's 6'2", 220. And it's like, oh, you're already like this size. And then when you see him in person, you're like, oh, you look like a linebacker. I think you could probably stick here. I'm sure that Oregon's going to need to add more weight to his frame. I'm sure that they have. I think that he was really, really good in his very, very small sample size a season ago. But
yeah,
I've liked what I've seen from him in practices and in the brief little game appearances and what other players have said about him. So I got him as my backup Mac linebacker, but there's an opportunity for other guys. The only problem with the true freshman linebackers is I'm just not sure, other than Brayden Platt, I'm just not sure like if they're physically there yet. Like with Kamar Mathudi, he's just a skinny guy. And Dylan Williams is a bigger fella, but I don't think that he's going to be like college football ready day one. Brayden Platt is the biggest of the ball, but even still, like, he's physically limited in terms of his lateral mobility and his ability to cover guys out of the backfield. So if he's in the game, it's probably only on a rushing down. And if a team is smart enough, they're going to go attack him on the perimeter, which is what, you know, teams have done to Oregon in the past, especially with Noah Sewell and Justin Flo whenever they were on the field together. So there's some smart people who run offensive play calls in the Big Ten too. So I'm sure that if that was the situation, somebody would find those guys in the field and exploit that. But I think that's it. That's it for linebackers. I don't know if any of the true freshmen are going to make a really big impact, but maybe something like Jerry Mixon, where they're there. Cause you still have Bryce Betcher, you still have Connor Soley. Like,
yeah,
there's at least six dudes who have in-game experience ahead of the three true freshmen. So,
no, you're right. And just quickly on the Devin part, he was one of my five under the radar players that could have a big spring. I'm also high on Devin. I think Jared undoubtedly has been higher. I think the athleticism stuff is just freaky. And I'm just never going to quit on a guy who's run a 10.54 on the 100 at 220 pounds. Yeah. You're just never going to see me go, maybe he doesn't have it. But I will say I've also been bitten by another really athletic Jackson, who was a linebacker at Oregon. That would, of course, be Adrian Jackson, who had not 10.5, 400-meter speed. But I think Jared and I stuck with him basically until he transferred, of thinking, okay, he's got to find a way to be valuable. He's just so physically gifted.
They did him dirty. They should have just kept him as a linebacker instead of trying to make him like an edge rusher. He's 6'2".
Yeah, he was 6'2", 230. Anyway, that's just one where I go, gosh, I hope that's not what happened. If that's what happens with Devin Jackson, I'm going to be so disappointed, because the raw tools are like NFL caliber athlete at linebacker, especially if he can pack on and get up to like 235 or something. So I'm very high on him undoubtedly being in the two deep. Jerry's a guy where I think the movement skills are awesome and like super encouraging and exciting. And I'm going to be really, I kind of think what the way I look at it is almost in terms of tiers. You've got the Bosa and Jacobs tier, which is the starting two. And I know these guys play different positions, but just broadly how I'm kind of grouping them, I think Devin is feels like my third guy, even though, as you say, he's a money linebacker. He's not going to play Mac. And then I just think there's an open kind of spot there where you can look at Mixon, you can look at Betcher and Soley, the returners, and then you can throw one of these true freshman guys in. You, as you said about Mixon coming in a little bigger, maybe Mathudi's going to be a little bit thicker than we expected. I agree. He's definitely a narrower build at linebacker, a little bit leaner. But shoot, if he comes in and can keep some of those movement skills, and maybe he's already at 220, 225, maybe he can be somebody who can factor into it. Platt, as you said, is probably the most, you know, feels like the most ready to go just because he is a little bit more well put together. But I just think amongst those two guys, and then obviously Dylan Williams, who had it sounds like an incredibly strong, I think, Poly Bowl practice period, and then had the pick in that game and played really well. There's kind of some buzz with him. I just think amongst those three guys, somebody's going to emerge, and whether it be in the two deep or just be a rotational piece, somebody will be in there. So that's all I have to say there. Why don't you run through kind of the same exercise with the interior defensive line and then the edge guys?
Yeah, so a lot of younger guys on the edge and the outside linebacker spots as there were last year. Mateo, Uiagalelei, Blake Purchase, Tatum Tuioti, and Amarion Winston. I think the oldest of the group is Amarion Winston. He's just a redshirt sophomore. Last year was his redshirt freshman season. So a lot of youth on the edge. Pretty plain and simple.
It's all youth. But, yeah,
it's all youth. And you know, the other thing is that they were good last year. So you would imagine that they all would take a step up in development. And as for the interior, I have three guys who are qualified as the underclassmen descriptor that we put earlier. Johnny Bowens, a defensive end, backup to Jordan Birch. And then nose tackle, I have Amari Washington as a redshirt freshman starting, and Ben Roberts as a redshirt sophomore as his backup. So those are my three interior guys, or you know, more or less interior, the defensive end spot. But like you said earlier, going into this exercise, it was a lot of dart throwing. You know, there's a lot of question marks about what the interior of this defensive line is going to look like. And that's something that I've talked a lot about before, and the need to add a bunch of guys through the portal to make up for the losses of Casey Rogers, Taki Taimani, Popo Amabai, and you know, others who have come through Oregon and have been Brandon Dorless. How could I forget? Guys who have been real impact players the last 2 years who are now no longer there, and you need to refill those snaps with somebody else. And they're going to have to give all the young guys a shot, because there's A, no other option, and B, it's like you get all these young guys in the last two classes that you're very excited for, all these these four-star guys who are from out of state, like Texas and in the South. Like, you got to give them a chance to get their legs underneath them, give them a real opportunity here. And we're going to see it in spring ball. Like, I think Amari Washington, who at the Fiesta Bowl, Dan Lanning talked very highly of, he's probably a shoe-in, at least at this point, to be the starter at nose tackle. I have Jamari Caldwell at defensive tackle. So those two on the inside, but you know, we'll see ultimately what that lineup looks like. But like, there's not a lot of other options. And that's why Ben Roberts is the backup, and maybe Keon Ware Hudson gets the start at D tackle and you move Jamari to nose, but I don't know. I'm really flying blind here in the defensive line department until we start to watch anything in spring ball. And we may not see anything until the spring game, like we talked about earlier.
Unfortunately, the defensive linemen do their work at the very opposite side of the field as well. Just to put that out there. I think the true freshman, there's a bunch of different things I want to talk about here. And I don't want to spend all our time on this question, but the true freshmen are going to be fascinating just because like Jericho, Aiden, and Elijah are more highly, actually, even at this point, Xavion Sims, with the way his recruitment finished in terms of his ranking, those guys are like more highly regarded as prep recruits than pretty much any of the redshirt freshman / sophomore group that you're talking about. With like Amari. Amari's actually a sophomore. I'd kind of forgotten. He played 7 games last year. So it'll be really interesting to see those guys compete. Because while I agree with your instinct to list the guys who've been here a year above guys we just never have seen play at Oregon, like I will not be surprised at all if we come out of spring being like, oh, Jericho Johnson is just as good as Amari. He's going to be a starter or in that competition. Or if we come out saying Aiden Breland is just as he's more physically gifted than any other defensive tackle on this roster than other than Jamari Caldwell, and he's going to be the backup. Or we come out saying, actually, even though we loved what we saw from Tatum and Mateo and Blake Purchase, Elijah Rushing is just special, and there's no way he's not in the two deep. That's the kind of stuff that gets you excited, is the possibility of that coming together. And we could also come out, and it would be a disappointing outcome probably for many, saying, well, maybe not. Maybe these guys are actually just true freshmen, and that there's a reason it's hard to play, you know, major Power 4 Division 1 football at, you know, as a true freshman, especially along the defensive line, you know, going into the Big 10 against some of those road grading offensive lines. Are you really going to want to rely on some of these young guys? Are they really ready? I think the variety of possible outcomes is what kind of makes this so intriguing to me, because I'm with you. Like, I don't even know what I would do putting together. Like, I tried to do the exercise and I you just get stuck going, I don't even know exactly where everybody fits. I don't know who we should put above who, because like Amari Washington's the most experienced of these guys, and he's played like 80 snaps. So we don't have
– Yeah, literally 80.
Yeah, we don't really have this big sample size to pull from here in terms of making these decisions. But it's going to be, for me, the most exciting part of spring. And again, it's probable that I'll be really disappointed and we'll see hardly anything other than the spring game. But
yeah.
I just want to know what these guys, you know, look like. I mean, at the very, I guess, baseline level, we'll get to see these guys walking in out of practice and doing conditioning. So, like, last year, Terrence Green became a guy I was really intrigued by just because physically he stood out as, like, a true 6'5", 6'6", guy who carries 315 pounds better than about anybody you'll see. I hope those aren't the kind of broad strokes of assessments we're forced to make because we don't see very much, but we will at least be able to tell you, like, Aiden Breland looks for real, or Elijah Rushing looks for real, or maybe, like, actually Elijah Rushing needs to gain 20 pounds of weight before we think he's going to
be able
to do a ton. So those are kind of the conversations that we'll definitely be having, although I would love to be able to say we're coming out going like, oh yeah, actually it looks like so-and-so is really, really making a push leading into spring. The spring game on the 27th, just because from an information perspective, we might not have much, but I'm pretty fired up to be out there and seeing what it looks like, certainly starting here in about 4 days. Mm-hmm. Anything else you wanted to hit here that stood out from your perspective on kind of that last question?
Just that don't fall in love with my depth chart prediction. I don't love it. Like, these are like, they're all just kind of shots in the dark. Like, this is the most information I have at this point, that, like, based off of what happened last season, based off of who didn't enter the transfer portal, and based off what I've seen with my own two eyes, like, this is what I would do. But unlike other position groups where it's like, hey, there's four really good guys and then everybody else is a question mark.
Yeah.
Like, there's two players where I'm like, yeah, it's Jordan Birch and Jamari Caldwell, where you're like, yeah, you guys are going to play, like, a lot. And everybody else, maybe other than the edge guys, the sophomore edge guys, where there's literally nobody else in their position group except for, like, Ashton Porter. I don't know. So that's going to be the fun part of spring, is being like, all right, where do all you guys play? Because I don't know. We're going to find out. So, yeah, I just wouldn't fall in love with my prediction. I don't love it, but I still put it out there because, boy, we got to do it. We got to get those clicks.
I was going to say, content is king.
Content king. Yeah, and, right into spring ball.
And nobody, there's no story people are more interested in reading than a two deep in March. But it's actually true. It is, like, proven. Yeah, people love reading that stuff and thinking about that stuff way advanced this season.
The other thing is that nobody on the beat, on our beat, knows, like, what the heck the defensive line is going to look like. Like, I've talked to James Crepio, the Oregonian, who James puts in a trillion more hours than anybody else here combined. And that's not necessarily the best thing in the world, but it's what James does. He is the ultimate worker. And then I've talked to Jared Denny of On Three, and it's like, we don't know. Like, it's so, I don't know. Dan just loves to keep a little secret, and there's like 100 million new names who are coming into town. So we're not sure, but we'll find out maybe in the next couple of weeks. I don't know.
Oh, one last thing I wanted to do was I wanted to cape and then declare somebody a my guy, which you've done. You've kind of carved out a niche of these are the guys I like. I just think Amarion Winston gets overlooked a lot, and
sure,
you brought him up, and you know, everybody was talking about that trio of true freshmen with Mateo and Tatum and Blake, who I am extremely high on. Couldn't be more high on the future of these edge guys. I just think Amarion gets overlooked. I don't know if people realize he played more than basically all of those guys. And then I know nobody wants PFF grades to be the only way you assess talent. But if you were to go purely off of those, Amarion would be like the sixth best defensive player in Oregon's roster last year, and far more highly regarded than any other true freshman. He and Mateo have actually pretty similar grades, but Tatum and Blake are way down the list. I don't know if that's the way the conversation is going amongst fans, which, again, I don't care how the conversations they have. It'll turn out on the field this year of who the better players are. But I just think Amarion's a player who kind of gets overlooked a little bit. local kid. He, in part because he is a run defense specialist, he is very, very good at setting edges. He's a little bit more thickly built than these other guys. He and Mateo are probably more closely built than the others. But yeah, I think he's a really good player. And so that's, I just wanted to, in this conversation, since he qualifies as a young player, I wanted to throw out a little bit of props for Winston, because I don't know if we talk enough about him. And that's something that hopefully will change as we get into his redshirt sophomore season this fall. All right, I'm going to wrap the show up with this one from @Ross_Maselich. Sorry, Ross.
There you go.
What are you looking to see from the defense under Lanning and Lupoi and company in year three? # Ots and Audibles. So this is a little bit more broad and not specifically spring. You know, I guess, well, it's interesting. So if we're looking at this from the perspective of like growth in this, the concept and the scheme, or are we looking at this as like, what are we hoping to see to be, to ensure this is a good defense? It's like two different questions. Cause like, I have concerns about the defensive line and I'm not totally sure what's happening at safety. I think they're going to be really good at corner. So like, if I guess my answer to this question broadly would be like, I hope we see by the time games start in, I guess this year it's early, or late August, I guess I hope we see a really deep, talented defensive line, and we see enough of these true freshmen emerge, and we see whoever, whatever the pecking order is at corner, kind of settles in and it's really good. And there's enough youth that is ready to contribute at safety that you're set, and that just from a personnel perspective, everybody's good to go. Cause I still have personnel questions. But I think if we're looking at it like steps from year two to year three, I just think broadly the answer is you want to see them step up in the big games a little bit more. And I don't know if that's fair or not, but like a year ago, they had a really hard time in both those games against Washington. And I understand Washington is legitimately going to have a first or second round quarterback and three receivers taken in the first three rounds of this year's NFL draft. That is going to put an incredible amount of pressure on any defense, not to mention the fact that one of their tackles is a first round pick. You know, they had a tight end who isn't draft eligible this year, but will be going forward. And it's probably going to be, you know, taken pretty highly as well. Like there's a lot of talent. The running back Dylan Johnson proved to actually be a much better player than I thought the first go around going in. But I guess just broadly, and I'm not even getting into schematics, you're hoping that you don't come out of the Ohio State, the Michigan game, I'll throw Wisconsin on the road kind of late, saying, oh, the defense kind of let them down again in a big moment. And I know some of that's unfair because, like I said, Washington, uber talented. Ohio State will be uber talented on offense. I don't really know what Michigan or Wisconsin will be, or whether or not we'll have the kind of that similar discussion based upon their talent. But I guess broadly, and it's not a spring answer, like that's kind of what I'm hoping to see is if they do lose those games, it's like, oh, the defense didn't cost them the game. Because I think if you come out of that this year, you'll be really disappointed, even though that's sort of an unfair way. I'm acknowledging it's kind of an unfair way of looking at it, but that will be the conversation.
Yeah, it was certainly the conversation last year. Certainly the conversation the year before, even though, you know, the guys weren't really in the right scheme. Like clearly last year, like the personnel was much better. I think what I'm looking for, like on a very broad scale, is just like the physicality matchup. Like, you know, it's a lot of you hear a lot about like, oh, the Big Ten, we're gonna run it down your throats. Like we're gonna run I form, we're gonna run 13 personnel at all times. And you know, that was a huge problem in 2022. I mean, we all remember the Oregon State game. Like these were legitimate problems in the physicality aspect. Last year they were much better. You know, they dominated against Oregon State. They dominated against Utah, another team that likes to run big packages. There's just not a lot of those left out there, and a lot of them come from the Big Ten. And so we're going to find out. And you know, I just went through the exercise of who is going to be on the defensive line, and you're going to have veterans in Jamari Caldwell and Jordan Birch, but there's a lot of question marks in terms of you know, who's going to be the nose tackles and the defensive tackle or the backups there or the edge rushers, like, and all those guys are going to need to handle the physicality of the Big Ten. And I don't know if that's going to happen because I've never seen it. So that's the biggest question mark I have going into the year, just because I've never seen this before. None of us have ever seen this before. You know, Oregon plays a Big Ten team every once in a while, and played Ohio State. They play people in the Rose Bowl, blah, blah, blah. But full schedule, full travel schedule, you know, going to Michigan, you know, playing Michigan State, like real Big Ten teams. You know, I think it's going to be interesting. And just in terms of improvements, I see the big game aspect of it, but yeah, there have been some problems the last couple of years with pass defense. It's gotten bad at points. I think specifically in those big games that we talk about, and it's usually against a good quarterback, which surprise, like good quarterbacks can help you win a game, if in case you didn't know that. But I think that this year there's going to be a clear improvement in the pass defense as long as everybody stays healthy. Yeah, I still worry about the safety and the rotation there, and I'm not really sure who's going to be the backup boundary star or field safety. So who knows? But I've got a pretty decent idea. It's just I don't know what the rotations are going to look like, and that kind of worries me in a quarterback who's more willing to take a deep shot. Like when Oregon plays Ohio State, Will Howard is going to have all these weapons at his disposal. Like he's probably going to be more willing to take a deep shot than he did at Kansas State, excuse me, where he did pretty frequently. So, you know, there's some real concerns, there's some worries, but I think it's more just the physicality aspect of moving to the Big Ten and not having, you know, a returning starting defensive line that, you know, had fifth and sixth year seniors all around it. Now it's a bunch of redshirt sophomores, redshirt freshmen, and true sophomores. So just some question marks about physicality, but I'm not overly concerned about that.
I think that's a very good answer, and I like that you kind of focused in on an area. One area that, and you just kind of touched on it, that I guess I am curious, and we haven't really talked a lot about, is, you know, Oregon's shortcomings at safety, sometimes in pass coverage. I don't know if they really, really kind of filled that this offseason. Because again, as you said, Kobe Savage is kind of an Evan Williams prototype, more of that he's going to have more success in the box than he is in coverage. And the best, you know, free safety they've had in a moment from just a pure coverage perspective probably is Brian Addison, just in terms of covering space. And there's not a guy quite like that on this team, unless you think Lalea or Lopa are just like ready immediately.
Well, Lalea is a corner.
I know, but I'm just saying hypothetically that size and length to be able to move. Yeah, Lalea is a corner. I'm just throwing out names that physically could be that kind of player. So I'm not saying it's necessarily a massive detriment, the fact that they've, but from a personnel perspective, I don't know if they really like addressed improving that area to the degree that I was maybe expecting through the portal is the only thing I say. Cause like, as much as I like Tysheem, there was a pretty gnarly stat on PFF again, but it was like in terms of yardage given up from an individual, he gave up like almost more yards than any other defensive back in Oregon secondary combined in coverage. And I know that's kind of unfair based upon the position he was playing, cause he's in all sorts of weird, he has to cover, I guess, the most diverse arsenal of offensive players just playing at nickel. But yeah, I do get a little bit concerned, I guess, just about the personnel there. Not to do too much, hey, I'm concerned about this because it is March and a ton of stuff could change, but I guess that's one thing that I'm looking to see other defenses, just can they improve from a personnel perspective at safety.
You know, I think it's very fair. I think there were some real problems in pass defense from a season ago. I think those really honestly only reared their head when it was against a good quarterback.
True.
Other than that, like, you felt, I mean, you probably went into every game feeling pretty confident about Evan Williams and Tysheem Johnson and their ability to play safety. And even Steve Stevens for the longest time of the year. Like, there was some.
Steve played way better than I thought he would. I want to give credit to Steve. I don't want to overlook that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah. No, he was tremendous last year. And I guess all you're asking for from Kobe Savage and or Tysheem and Brandon Johnson, like, be better than Evan Williams and Steve Stevens, which can be achievable. I agree with you with the They don't have a Brian Addison type player at free safety, which I would have loved. I think that was like at the top of my wish list for one of the top of my wish list for a transfer portal addition, but it's fine. There's still time to move a guy over if they so choose. There's still the spring portal. They just, you know, they have to get under 85 scholarships first, but yeah, it's a different story. There's a chance, I don't know, like maybe Dante Manning moves over to plays at free safety, but even though he's not the tallest guy in the room, but he brings good physicality and at least has coverage skills from a cornerback. Yeah, this would have been a great spot for Tre'Quez Bridges to be a safety, but you know, neither here nor there. My dream of seeing Tre'Quez Bridges as a safety will never come to fruition, and that's okay.
I was going to say it's going to be the year 2045 and Jared's still going to be thinking, gosh, if he could play free safety and they had Brian Addison. I know that was the dream, was those two long guys playing back there together. Those are the questions we had, but I did want to throw it just to you, Jared, because Matt and I had our own show on Friday of last week where we talked about things we were most excited about for spring. Just broadly, are there like what that we haven't maybe talked about in today's episode? Are you kind of just looking forward to seeing like this week?
Oh boy. Obviously just excited for football. I think that's you know, an underlying thing, but you know, just going on the football field and seeing actual football being played is always a treat, always a pure like exciting moment. I think we touched on a lot of it. Like I'm really interested to see all the defensive side of the ball because that's primarily what I focus on. I don't feel like there's no quarterback controversy or anything like that this camp. Like it's going to be fun to see Dante Moore, but Dylan Gabriel's a starter. Your running back duo of Bucky Irving and Noah Whittington, as long as Whittington is healthy, is your starting or backup. Like I don't know who's going to start and who's going to be the backup, but that's it. Your wide receivers are pretty set in stone. Your offensive line is kind of seemingly set in stone, except for right guard, which probably is just going to be Matthew Bedford. We'll see if Nashad Strother makes a run, but who knows? And then, I don't know, tight end seems pretty cool. Kenyon Sadiq, I think, is like the breakout player that I'm going to predict this year. But I'm just more excited to see football in general and just what the hell is going on in the defensive line. Because, like I said earlier, I don't know. Nobody else knows. Dan, I would assume, knows. Probably Tosh Lupoi knows. But anybody else outside of those two people and probably the players – don't know. So that's what I'm most excited for.
Jared, what do you think the resistance would be if us as the media collectively had an uprising and said, we're going to go walk down to where the defensive line drills are, and we're going to go watch Tony Tuioti's group up close and center? What do you think the outcome of that would be? What resistance would we have if we just all 12 of us said, we're going down. We got to watch these guys. This is the most interesting part.
I think Todd would grab us all and pick us up like in the cartoons and bang our heads together. And, I think we would not be allowed to go to practice anymore.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
I think it would be a rather short-lived and probably not worthwhile venture. But I really want to watch these guys. And again, I know the listeners don't quite understand it, but they put the defensive line drills like literally a full football field length away. And I mean, we are unable to see hardly anything unless you bring binoculars, which we do because we have to. All right. Unless you've got anything else, Jared, we're going to go ahead and wrap it here. Like I said earlier, we'll be back later this week recapping either the pro day and the first day of practice. Maybe we just do both in one day. We'll kind of see how the week plays out, but that's sort of the tentative plans for this week. So without further ado, this has been Eric Scopel and Jared Mack from the Odds and Audibles podcast. Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.